It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. Well, it's been a while since we've had something scary, so we're going to start off with that. Listen to The Shadow People from 1942.
And now, the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of The Shadow People.
Elaine, have you been... I mean, have you seen anything else since you spoke to me last?
No, I haven't. Ever since Mother died, nothing's happened.
Well, I only hope... It came from upstairs. Come on.
I don't know what to think.
I only hope it...
David, if anything's happened to him...
We'll see in a moment.
There's no light in this room.
You wait here, Elaine. Where's the light?
Over to your left. David, what's wrong? Why didn't you leave the light on?
Your father's dead, Elaine.
In just a moment, the Hall of Fantasy will present The Shadow People. And now for our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Shadow People.
Somewhere along the line of your life, you've met them. You have come in contact with the Shadow People. When did we first discuss it? Oh, yes, Brian and Elaine and I. It was in my apartment. There was only one light on in the entire place. What's wrong? Elaine, what's the matter?
Oh, it's silly, I know, but I thought I saw something in that doorway over there.
Where?
Over there, right over there. Where are you going, David?
Over to that archway, just to let you know that nothing's here.
You see, Elaine, nothing's wrong, nothing at all.
Are you satisfied that there's no one else here but us?
Yes, I'm sorry, I just thought that I... Leave the overhead lights on.
I'm sorry, I thought that...
Put them back on, David, please.
All right, Elaine.
Look, what's bothering you, sis?
I don't know, it's just that... I don't know.
Tell us about it, Elaine. Tell us what's bothering you.
You promise that you won't laugh at me?
Of course not.
Brian?
Oh, Elaine, I'm your brother. If something's troubling you, I'd like to know about it.
All right, then. The reason I was so upset was the fact that I saw someone or something standing in that archway.
But Elaine, David showed you that there was no one else in here. When the lights were put on, you saw for yourself that we were alone.
I'm not talking about something you can see in the light, Brian. I'm not talking about a human being.
And what's it all about, Elaine?
In the darkness, I saw something that can't be seen in a lighted area. And I've seen it several times before.
You're sure you're not imagining this, Elaine?
Oh, I don't have that good an imagination, Brian.
How long have you seen this thing, Elaine?
Well, it started about 6 weeks ago. You were in Detroit on business, Brian. Mom and Dad were on vacation. I was in the house by myself, in the library. There was only one light on. I sat in the chair beneath it, reading. Several times I thought that something was watching me. I felt there was someone in the room with me, standing right in back of me. Every so often I'd glance back over my shoulder, but there seemed to be nothing there. And then I thought I heard someone whispering. I wasn't sure, but when I heard it again, I got up and I looked all over the house. Oh, I'm not easily frightened, you know that, but out in the hallway, it was almost entirely black. Luckily, I was near a light switch. I looked back over my shoulder, and I saw this huge, hulking shape for the first time. And I heard a voice, or rather the whisper of a voice. I couldn't distinguish the words, but that dark shape seemed to be moving towards me. My hand was on the light switch, and I turned it on. And the minute the light flooded the hallway, the shape was gone. There was nothing there. I was alone again. As long as there's light, I know it can't hurt me. I know it can't reach me.
You might have imagined it, you know.
Of course, that's possible, but I'm sure I didn't. It was so real. So real, that shape in the darkness. It was the very essence of evil itself.
There was an old man I knew of, a Dr. Hesedius. I'd heard that he knew quite a good deal about the supposed supernatural manifestations which had taken place in the world. I went to him to see if he knew anything that might explain the events of the story Elaine had told us.
Yes, my good sir. What do you wish?
I have an appointment with Dr. Hesedius.
Oh, yes. If he mentioned something about it. You are Mr. Drake.
Yes.
If you'll come inside.
Thank you.
Dr. Hesedius is in the study. Please come with me. Doctor, a visitor for you.
Oh, yes. Bring him in. You may go now.
Yes, Doctor.
Mr. Drake?
Yes.
Sit down, please, in that chair over there.
Thank you, sir.
Now, what is the nature of your visit to me?
Well, I understand, Dr. Hesedius, that you have a great knowledge of the supernatural manifestations which have occurred on the Earth.
Great knowledge, Mr. Drake? No, hardly that. I have only scratched the surface in my years of study. Perhaps I can help you, then again, perhaps I cannot.
Well, may I tell you the story?
By all means, my good sir.
All right. Now, this didn't happen to me, Doctor, but to my fiancée. It seems that about 6 weeks ago, when she was alone... When the light was on, the dark form disappeared. And that's the story, sir. As much of it as I can remember.
Mm-hmm. I see. It's a strange tale to tell.
I'm fully aware of that, Dr. Hesedius.
You say she seemed to hear whispered voices?
Yes, that's what she says.
I see. A moment, please. I have a book in my file. Oh, yes. Here it is. This is the one. Yes. Perhaps I may be able to help you after all. Let me see. This is a very ancient book, Mr. Drake. I seem to remember... Yes. Here is an account of a happening such as you relate. And we shall live on the earth, and they shall
not see us. Yes, it has been foretold by the ruler of the darkness. They who live by day, retire to sleep by night, shall never know that we walk with them, that we watch them, that we wait for our chance. Only in the night will they see us, for in the daylight we are not seen. Only in the night, when the darkness grows together and the forms of the shadow people are shaped from the blackness, they will know us.
Then they will know that we are their companions, for we are the shadow people. I knew I had read something similar to the story you have told me, Mr. Drake.
Dr. Hesedius, what can we do?
Well, give me a little time. Let me see if I can find any more references to these people of the darkness. One more thing, Mr. Drake. Be sure that your fiancée is never left alone at night. Be sure that there is some living thing, animal or human, which accompanies her every second of the night. For she is in danger, Mr. Drake. A terrible danger.
Back now to our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Shadow People.
That night, the night of the day I had seen Hesedius, Elaine's mother died. She died in her sleep. When she failed to appear for breakfast, Elaine's father went upstairs to see what was wrong. When he entered her room, he discovered that she was dead. The family doctor couldn't explain it, for Elaine's mother had been in perfect health. A few weeks later, I was out at the house spending a weekend with them. I glanced at the clock on the mantel, and it showed 11.
I can't understand why Brian hasn't returned from town.
Well, he said he had some extra work to catch up on. He told me this morning that he might be late.
Well, 11 o'clock, I'm going upstairs. Glad you came out, David. It's good seeing you again.
It's a pleasure to be here, sir.
Well, don't stay up too late. See you both in the morning.
Night, Dad.
Good night, Mr. Davis.
He isn't the same, David. Ever since Mother died, he hasn't been the same.
I didn't realize that until tonight. He's changed.
I only hope that he'll start living again. Ever since she died, it seems that a part of him died with her.
Elaine, have you been... I mean, have you seen anything else since you spoke to me last?
No, I haven't. Ever since Mother died, nothing's happened.
Well, I only hope. Came from upstairs. Come on.
You don't think...
I don't know what to think. I only hope...
David, if anything's happened to
him... We'll see in a moment.
There's no light in his room.
You wait here, Elaine. Where's the light?
Over to your left. David, what's wrong? Why didn't you leave the light on?
Your father's dead, Elaine. I'd walked into the darkened bedroom. On the bed was Elaine's father. It didn't take a second look for me to know that he was dead. I switched off the light and walked back into the hallway to tell Elaine what happened. And then from the room there had come an eerie, quiet laughter. In the darkness of that room was some unknown evil power. The voice itself was unearthly. There was no substance to it. It sounded as if it came from the darkness itself.
No. No, I don't believe you.
It's the truth, Elaine. There's nothing more I can do. We'll have to notify the police.
Tell me it's not the truth, David. Tell me it's not true.
I'm sorry, Elaine. I wish I could. Your father's dead. After the burial, Dr. Hesselius got in touch with me. He said that he wanted to meet both Elaine and Brian, that he wanted to talk to the three of us. Accordingly, a few nights later, he came out to their house.
Miss Davis, will you tell me just when you saw the first manifestation?
The night Brian was in Detroit.
Now, Miss Davis, you have even seen this apparition in the company of other people, is that correct?
Yes. The night at David's apartment.
All right. Now I'll tell you what I think. You are in deadly danger, Miss Davis. These beings want to claim you. So far, they have had no success. Only in the darkness do they have power. Little by little, step by step, they have been removing the obstacles in their way to reaching you. First your mother, and then your father, Miss Davis. Both died in the same fashion. In the darkness, death struck at them. Now tell me, do you feel their presence here in this room as I talk to you?
Yes.
Turn out the lights, Brian.
No.
Stand by the switch, if you please, Brian. If anything happens, turn the lights back on.
All right.
Dr. Hesselius, I don't...
Do you want me to continue working with you?
Yes, sir.
All right, then. Brian, turn off the lights.
Yes, doctor.
The room now is in darkness, Miss Davis. Do you feel or see anything?
No, I... Yes. Yes, I do.
Do you see anything?
Yes.
Doctor, I don't...
Be quiet, you fool. I know what I'm doing.
In front of me. The darkness gathering together into a huge, terrible...
Not only do you see us, Miss Davis, but everyone else in the room also will see the vague shapes forming themselves in the blackness. We do not want you, Dr. Hesselius. The girl we want. We advise you to drop this case. You can only bring down the wrath of the Shadow People upon your head. The girl. We want the girl. Do not stop us. Let us take her now.
Turn in the light! They're gone. Miss Davis, are you all right?
Yes, I am.
Just as she said. The darkness. I saw it form into something, too.
So did I. What are we going to do, Dr. Aesilius?
At the present moment, I don't know. But it's much I do know. You must leave this house immediately. You must try to get out of their reach. I don't know if that is possible. I hope it is. I shall have to return to my home. I must learn if there is some manner by which we can defeat these creatures. For the moment, leave this house. Dispose of it in any manner you may see fit, but leave this house.
Back now to our story. An original tale of fantasy by Richard Thorne entitled The Shadow People.
We spent the night in my apartment, the three of us. The following day, Brian and Elaine made arrangements to dispose of the house. In the afternoon, Dr. Vesalius called me and asked that I come to see him.
David, I'm glad you're here.
Anything new, Doctor?
Yes and no. You realize, of course, that this spiritual manifestation is not new, that it has gone on for centuries.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
It's true, David. De Maupassant wrote what was supposedly a fiction story about the manifestation, David. He called it Orla. However, according to the information here on my desk, it was taken from an actual case history. Of course, he embroidered the story, added a few touches to something he didn't realize actually existed.
But have you found anything with which we can fight them?
Everything depends upon an answer I received from a colleague of mine in Paris, Dr. Henri Renault. I dispatched a telegram to him last night.
Why hasn't he answered by now?
There are certain things that must be done. It will take a few days, I'm afraid. We have to wait, David. There's nothing else we can do.
In the next few days, the house was sold, and Brian and Elaine moved into a newer, more modern home a few miles from my apartment. Cecilia said it might take a few days for them to build up their power. I spent the night at the new house. The lights were left on, and I watched for any unusual occurrence. In the daytime, I'd return to my apartment and get some sleep. About 4 days after Elaine and Brian moved into the new house, I was at home when Hesilius phoned me. Hello?
David?
Yes, Dr. Hesilius?
I hate to tell you this, David.
What's the matter? What's wrong?
They were a step ahead of me, David. I just received word that Renault died or was killed at the very moment I sent the telegram to him.
Step by step, they had outwitted us. For they had anticipated every move we'd make. Even Dr. Hesilius was at a loss as to what to do. He agreed to meet me at the Davis house.
What did you want to see us about, Dr. Hesilius?
Did you find out anything more?
I'm sorry to say that I haven't. At the moment, I'm at a complete loss. I don't know what to do.
But what did you want to see us about this evening?
Merely to check, to see if anything else has happened. Miss Davis, have you seen or heard anything?
Not in the house, only in my dreams.
Your dreams?
Yes. When I go to sleep at night, in my dreams, in the darkness, I see them.
And it's grown worse, much worse. I was hoping that it would not have progressed so far. There has been no disturbance in this house, but now they disturb your sleep, Miss Davis. Now, you must stay awake for as long as you can. I want the three of you to move into my house. Perhaps that will give you more protection.
That night, we moved over to Vesalius' house. Perhaps Elaine would have more protection there. From there, we might be able to devise some plan of action, some way to beat those beings. For a few days, things were quiet. The Shadow People seemed to have withdrawn. For a while, I thought that we might have succeeded in thwarting their purpose. Elaine no longer complained of troubled sleep. But that condition lasted for a few days only. About 10 days later, They made themselves known and felt again. That night, we were in the study when suddenly Cecilia whirled around and...
Elaine, what are you looking at?
Outside the house. Right where the light leaves off. I see them.
She's right, Dr. Cecilius. I can see them, too.
What should we do, Doctor?
Nothing.
What do you mean, nothing?
There's nothing we can do.
We can't just...
We can't do anything, Brian. Don't you understand that they have us at their mercy? The greatest man in my field was Henri Renault. If he could do nothing against them, what do you think we can do?
He's right, Brian. There's nothing we can do.
As long as the house remains lighted, just so long will they remain outside. If the lights were to...
That sounds...
When my father was killed, the same sound we heard, the same sound.
The lights! What's happened to the lights, all right?
No,
be quiet, please.
I thought of this emergency.
A candle.
That's right, Miss Davis. As long as this burns, this one candle will be safe. For they cannot advance into the light. They are limited by the darkness. As long as the candle burns, they will have to remain outside of this room.
Around you, in every room of the house, in the darkness outside, we are around you. This time you shall not escape. This time we will blame you.
Take it easy, Brian. I can't stand it. I'm getting out of here.
Brian, come back.
Don't be a fool. I'm going after him.
Stay here.
We just can't let him
go. He won't have a chance. I doubt it. Miss Davis, I'm afraid that your brother is dead.
The wind, Doctor. Listen to the wind.
I know.
Yes, Doctor, listen to the wind. You must realize by now that the three of you haven't a chance. You must know in your minds that we can destroy you at any moment we desire. But, Dr. Cecilius, you may still save your own life. Let the others go. Give them to us.
No. No, you will have to take all of us.
Shall we destroy your light? Shall we move in on you now?
As you will. Do as you will. I'm sorry, David. The candle is out.
In the darkness. The figure is in the darkness.
Characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
At this point in the podcast, I'd like to remind you all that there's an opportunity to listen to old-time radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's with the Radio Theater Channel. You can find that at www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. And there's a full schedule there on the website, too. So certainly do check that out. Well, we've had our mystery there, so we're going to have a little comedy to balance things out. This time, we've got Abbott and Costello. This show is called Grade School, and it's from 1944.
The Abbott and Costello program, brought to you by Camel, the cigarette that's first in the service according to actual sales records. See if your throat and your taste don't make Camel a first with you, too. Find out for yourself. Listen to the great rhythms of Freddie Rich and his orchestra, the swingy singing of Connie Haynes, and that lad whose message loud and clear each Thursday rings into your ear.
All right, Costello, come here. You're all excited.
I like me.
You're all excited. What's the thing you've got there?
Huh?
It looks like a telegram. Where did you get it?
Oh, a fellow in a long green underwear gave it to me.
A fellow in a long green underwear?
Yeah, he was wearing a Western Union suit.
Ah, yeah, dummy, that was a messenger boy. And that's a telegram. What does it say?
It don't say nothing, Abbott. I can't see a thing.
Well, you dope, you haven't even opened the envelope.
Oh, do you have to open it? I thought you were supposed to peek through this little window in the front.
Give me that telegram. I'll read it. Hey, look, Costello. What? It's from your hometown.
Patterson, New Jersey?
Patterson, New Jersey.
Oh, boy!
Can you imagine? Look, it says, Dear Louis Costello.
Oh, yeah. Abbott, look at the way they spell Louis.
What do you mean?
L-O-U-S-E. That's my hometown.
Quiet, Costello. This telegram is from your old grade school in Patterson, Public School 15.
Oh, boy. Good old PS 15. My old alma mattress.
No. No, you mean alma mater. A mattress is something you lie on.
I know. I laid around that school for 10 years. What do they want with me, Abbott?
Well, the telegram goes on to say, let's see now. We are proud of you, Mr. Costello, and the whole school will greatly be honored if you would come to Patterson this Saturday night and appear in our annual school play, signed by the principal, J. Soil Off Wallpaper.
How do you like that, Abbott? Boy, oh boy, I knew my old school would send for me someday.
Sure they would.
I was always the hero of my school. I'll never forget Coach Abel Green.
What do you mean?
And those kids I played with, Michael Varello.
What did they do?
Those were the kids. We had a real team in that. I was even the captain of the tug-of-war team.
Wait a minute. What did you do on the tug-of-war team?
I was the second jerk from the end.
Yes, but I can't...
I don't get that.
I don't either. Look, I can't understand why that school would send for you to appear in a play. What do you know about grammar?
About what?
Do you understand grammar?
No, not since she got a new false teeth.
No.
Even Grandpa can't understand her.
Now, Costello, I'm talking about dramatic acting. Did you ever do anything dramatic in school?
Oh, did I? I used to get up, and I used to excite poetry.
You did?
Get a load of this little gem, which I wrote myself.
Let's hear it.
And roses are red, and violets are purple. Sugar is sweet, and so is maple syrup.
Come on,
maple syrup, it rhymes, darn it!
Well, what about it? But maple syrup, what is that?
What is maple syrup? Maple syrup is the stuff you put on flannel cakes.
Okay, look. Talk sense now. If you're going to Patterson, New Jersey, we've got to get down to the railroad station right away. Come on.
Okay, come on.
All right now, Costello, let's get our tickets for Patterson. We've got to find a comfortable place to sleep on the train.
Oh, I never have any trouble, Abbott. I got a system. I eat garlic before I get on a train.
What has garlic got to do with finding a place to sleep?
I just breathe in the conductor's face, and he gives me a wide berth.
Be sensible. Well, here's the ticket window. I beg your pardon, sir. We're going to Patterson. Could you tell us how the trains run?
Oh, yes. There's a big black thing that pulls them, and it goes choo-choo and... Woo-hoo!
This guy's been drinking too much of that traveler's aid.
Look. You better Let me handle this, Costello.
I think I better because I lost my place.
All right, never mind that. Now, look, in order to say... Say, Lou, come here.
Go ahead. I got it.
All right, look, I'll take care of everything. Don't worry about a thing. In order to save money, I think we'd better get a couple of upper berths.
Oh, but I don't want an upper. I want a lower.
But, Costello, do you realize that if you buy a lower, you'll find it's much higher than an upper?
Oh, sure. I mean, after all, any... What'd you say?
I said that a lower is higher than an upper.
A lower is higher than an upper?
Why, certainly.
Well, what are they doing, running the trains upside down?
Of course not. The lower is a more desirable berth. Therefore, if you want to go lower, you'll have to go higher.
If I want to go lower, I'll have to go higher?
Yeah.
Why should I go higher when I want to go lower?
Simply because if you want to go lower, you have to go higher. Because the lower is higher than the upper. And the reason the lower is higher than the upper is because the upper is higher up than the lower.
Oh! You mean that the upper is lower than the lower because the lower is higher than the upper?
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Costello, I'm trying to tell you that they sell the upper lower than the lower because when you sleep in an upper, you have to get up to go to bed.
I have to get up to go to bed?
That's right.
Who's paying for my berth?
You are.
And there ain't going to be anybody in it but me?
No.
Then why do I have to get up?
Costello, look, I've already explained it. Unless you go higher for a lower, then you're stuck with an upper. And you'll have to get up when you go to bed. And you'll have to get down when you want to get up.
Abbott.
What?
Let me smell your breath.
Oh!
Friends, would you like to do me a... Well, I was just about to say, do me a favor, but actually, I should say, do yourself a favor. Or maybe do your throat and your taste a flavor. Let them judge for themselves which cigarette best agrees with them. Let them answer the question you have so often asked yourself about which cigarette is best for you. Let your throat try Camel's kind, cool mildness. Let your taste sample that rich, full flavor. Because your T-zone, that's T for taste and T for throat, can tell you more about Camels in one puff than I can in 10 programs.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camels, a superb blend of costlier tobaccos. Freddie Rich plays the hit tune of today, but for many of you, it is also a hit of other years. Freddie revives Sweet and Lovely.
You are, Costello, in good old Paterson, New Jersey.
Yeah, Abbott. And here's my old school.
Do tell.
PS-15. As I stand here looking at this old building, I think of the happy days I spent here as a boy.
How long did you go to school, Costello?
You mean counting kindergarten?
Yes.
1 year.
Come on, let's find the principal's office and see what time we start rehearsing for the school play tonight.
Hey, what do you mean? What time we start rehearsing? Not we, me! This is my old school, not yours, Abbott.
What do you mean?
I'm going to do this play all by myself. I don't need your help.
Oh, how can you say that, Costello? Haven't I always given you the best of everything? Why, last Sunday, when we had a double date, I gave you the best girl. What a slick little number you had.
Slick number is right. I bent her back in my arms and her hair slid off.
All right, look, look. Look. Just cut that out, Costello. Wait a minute. I think this is the principal's office right here.
No, not that room.
What do you mean?
No, that room is where they have the art class.
What do you mean?
That's where I learned to draw, Abbott.
You did?
I was a wonderful drawer. My kid brother Sebastian is in there now. He's studying to be a drawer, too.
Well, that'll be nice.
Just think of it. The Costello brothers. A pair of drawers.
Look, never mind that. Where is the principal's office?
Oh, I don't quite remember, Abbott. But look. Here's my old first grade's room.
First grade room?
Yeah.
Hey. Well, why don't you go in and say hello to your old teacher?
Oh, I don't think Miss Sashwaite would remember me. I wonder if she's as fat as she used to be.
Why, was she very fat?
Fat. Every time she turned around, she used to erase the back blackboard.
I
said it!
All right. Well, go ahead. Open the door and see if she remembers you after all these years.
Okay. Boy, will she be surprised to see me. Miss Sashwaite!
Yes?
Don't you remember me? I'm Lou Costello.
Oh, and where were you all day yesterday?
Yesterday? I haven't been here for 15 years.
If you're absent one more day, you'll have to bring a note from your mother.
Just a minute, Miss Sashwaite. I'm Lou Costello. Don't you remember how 15 years ago I always used to pester you by raising my hand?
Yes.
Well?
You can go now.
Gee, Miss Sashwaite. Gee, she's changed. I remember when she used to keep me after school to spank her erasers.
All right, look. Come on, Costello. Here's the principal's office right over here. And you'd better let me talk to him. He's a very brilliant man.
Go ahead.
How do you do, sir? Are you Professor Wallpaper, the principal?
Yeah.
Oh, you can always tell a Harvard man.
Professor, I understand you want Costello to appear in your school play tonight.
Yeah, just a minute. I got the telephone tangled in my yo-yo. Now, if you fellas are looking for the rehearsal of the play, it's right in the next room.
Oh, all right. Come on, Costello.
Oh, I love you, Millicent, my darling.
I love you too, Rodney. Kiss me, my sweet.
Oh. Hey, you two, cut that out!
Shh, wait a minute, don't stop them, Costello. That's wonderful acting.
They're not acting. That's the janitor and the fourth grade teacher.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Can anybody tell us where they're rehearsing the play, please?
Yeah, right to the next room. Just ask for the English teacher. He's in charge.
Thanks.
Oh, I love you, Millicent, my darling.
I love you too, Rodney. Kiss me, my sweet.
Hey, Abbott, they've been doing that for 15 years.
Why don't they get together?
Well, she won't marry him when he's drunk, and he won't marry her when he's sober.
Yes, Randy. Yes, teacher, I'm a dandy.
Tetzel, don't tell me that you're teaching in this school, too.
Yeah, could be, yes. You know, I'm devoting my whole life to teaching the little kiddies how to speak perfectly the King's English. Yes, I went to one of the most famous colleges in England.
Eaton?
Yeah, Eaton and Brinkham. Hoo-hoo! I had a wonderful time.
I was in London once.
Yeah?
I met a beautiful girl on the street one day.
Piccadilly?
I certainly did.
He certainly did. I don't get it.
Yeah. Look, Kitzel, I understand you're directing the school play tonight.
Yes, I am, my friend. You know, my whole family was dramatic coaches. My grandfather was a coach, my father was a coach, my uncle was a coach. Oh, I come from a long line of coaches.
And what are you, the caboose?
Well, gentlemen, I'll see you tonight at the play. Now I must get back to my pupil.
Just a minute, Kitzel, yeah? Just a minute. Is my kid brother Sebastian in your English class?
Is that little Sebastian your brother? Woo-hoo, is he a bright little chappy? You know, he is speaking the best English from the whole school. Just a second, I'll call him. Sebastian!
Hello, Sebastian. Hello. I just wanted to tell you how proud I am of you.
Professor Kitzel just told me that you're the best English pupil in his whole class. Is that true?
Lovely Connie Haynes and a lovely song, together. Radio sure is a wonderful triumph of modern science, but as yet we haven't found out how to broadcast the flavor of a cigarette over a microphone. Only your own taste can tell you which cigarette you like best, and only your own throat can tell you which cigarette likes you best. So why not give your T-zone, that's T for throat and T for taste, a chance to judge the cigarette it likes best. Give your taste a chance to try the rich, full flavor of Camel's blend of costlier tobaccos. Give your throat the chance to try Camel's kind, cool mildness. Like millions of smokers, you too may find that your cigarette is...
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camel's. Let them tell their own story to your own T-Zone today.
And Teachers Club of Patterson, and all you dirty, dear little kiddies. We have a great surprise for you tonight. One of our former pupils, Lou Costello, has consented to present a play for us. Most of you remember Lou Costello. In his school days, he was the head boy along this block. And let us listen to this blockhead.
Costello, Costello, the audience is waiting for you. You've just been introduced. Open this door.
Here I am, Uncle Bud.
Sebastian, what are you doing in your brother's makeup and his costume? What is the meaning of this?
Louis has disappeared.
Disappeared?
Mm-hmm. But don't worry, Uncle Bud.
What do you mean?
I'm going out on the stage and I'm going to take his place. And the audience will never know the difference. I'll put on this big, big putty nose that I got, and I'll put on my nose, this big putty nose.
But, Sebastian, you've got the putty down over the end of your nose. How are you going to smell?
All right, unless they turn on the heat.
Look, Sebastian, what are you going to do when you get out on that stage?
Well, I'm going to tell them a story about Romeo and Juliet. And it was written by William Shakespeare, a very great ether.
Ether?
Mm-hmm.
You mean author. Ether puts people asleep.
That's what this story's going to do.
Well, all right, as long as Lou isn't here, I suppose you'll have to do it. Come on, hurry up. The curtain's going up. Come on, there you are.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm about to tell you the story of Romeo and Juliet. Now, I don't want any interruptions from you, Uncle Abbott.
Go ahead, let's
My
hear the
big
story.
Brother told me how you interrupt him.
Oh, well, go ahead.
But don't interrupt me.
Tell a story.
Don't give me that.
Go ahead,
don't
go ahead,
me,
go ahead.
All. I lost my place like my big brother. Now, I'm not kidding. Once upon a time, there was a fella named Romeo.
Romeo? What did this Romeo look like?
I got out of that one.
Well, all right, what did he look like?
Huh?
What did he look like?
Well, he was about... How do I know what he looked like? I never met the guy.
Then why do you tell stories about people you don't even know?
Nobody knows Romeo. He's just a guy in a story. He's an imaginary character.
Oh, you mean he's just a person in fancy?
In fancy? In fancy what?
In fancy nothing.
That's a good way to catch gold. Now, look, Uncle Bud, if you'll just shut up, I'll tell a story.
All right, go ahead. I won't say any more.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Once upon a time, there was a fellow named Romeo, and he was his father's only son.
Well, that's right. He was his father's heir.
His what?
His father's heir.
His father didn't have any hair. He was bald-headed.
All right, go ahead.
Now, don't interrupt me.
All right, go ahead.
Now, there's a girl in the story, and her name is Juliet. And her father was giving a big party, you know, to kind of sort of shove her into society.
Oh, you mean she was making her debut.
I don't know if it was a debut or her nightview. All I know, it was her first party, and a lot of people was invited to see her and stuff and things.
Well, you see, the folks were coming in to her coming out party.
How can you come in to come out? She was inside already.
Naturally, she had to come in to come out.
What does she want to come out for? She was inside. This wasn't an outdoor affair.
All right, all right.
This was inside.
I know that. You told me that. All right.
Well, if people are going to come in to come out, there's no use of going out to come in.
All right.
Why don't they stay home?
Look, Sebastian, you don't understand.
Why don't you stay home?
Look, you don't understand,
I
Sebastian.
Should stay home.
Now, listen,
here.
Please. You want me to tell your big brother on you?
Anybody got lozenges?
Listen, please. Look, the party brings her out.
The party brings her out.
That's right.
Why should the party bring her out? What did the little girl do?
No.
The party didn't even start. Some guy right away wants to drag her out.
No, you don't understand.
Why don't they leave the little kid alone?
Now, Sebastian.
Maybe she wasn't drinking.
But, cuz, listen, Sebastian.
Maybe she had one popsicle.
Now, Sebastian.
Maybe after all, the kid is okay.
Yeah, all right.
Lost again.
All right, go on with the story. Well, look, wasn't there... Look, wasn't Romeo invited to this party?
Talk longer!
Look, wasn't Romeo invited to this party is what I want to know, wasn't he?
Oh, sure, oh, that... sure. No, you see, Juliet's father... Thank you, Mr. Bernard. Juliet's father... I need him!
Now, come on, Sebastian.
Juliet's father didn't like Romeo, yes. So he had to put on a mask, and he borrowed another guy's clothes, and he went away.
Oh, Romeo went in disguise.
Yeah. In this guy's clothes.
I see. All right. I see.
You see, Uncle Bud, Romeo and Juliet's fathers was enemies, and they was fighting for 15 years.
They didn't like each other.
Yeah.
Which family brought on the feud?
They both brought on the feud, but Romeo wouldn't eat it. He was lovesick. He kept getting thin and pale.
Oh, I see. He looked wan.
Oh, yeah. He... What did you say?
I said, he looked wan. Don't you know what wan is?
Yeah, wan is the number before two.
No.
1, 2, a bottom I share.
No. Wan means picket. Romeo was picket.
Oh, sure. He was picket through the keyhole at Juliet.
Now, Sebastian.
Well, if I was there, I'd have picket out of her myself.
Sebastian, will you please go on with the play?
Well, anyway, every night Juliet used to sit on the balcony.
Why did she sit in the balcony?
Because she couldn't afford a seat in the orchestra.
All right.
And she liked to sit in the balcony.
All right, now, don't argue.
Up there she could smoke.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
Put her feet on the rail.
Yes, go on, go ahead.
So far, so good.
Go ahead.
One night, I hope I can hold out.
All right.
Juliet dropped her handkerchief, and Romeo picked it up and handed it to her.
And what did Juliet do when Romeo handed her the handkerchief?
She'd done like anybody else.
What? Just what?
Well, you know what
I mean.
Wait,
you know the story, don't you?
Oh, yes, she...
Well, what did Juliet do when Romeo handed her the handkerchief?
You know, like they always...
What did she do?
She wiped her nose!
All right, now.
Gee, did you have to make me say
well,
that?
Well, all right, never mind.
I mean, it's your line.
All right, look. But look, Sebastian, as I remember the story, Romeo had a rival and they fought a duel with lances. Now, what I can't understand is why did the other fella kick Romeo when Romeo dropped his lance?
because he caught Romeo with his lance down.
Look. That's enough, Sebastian. Stop the play. Stop it. I say, ladies and gentlemen, the play is over. Bring down the curtain.
Hey. What's the idea of stopping the play, Uncle Bud?
Sebastian, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Not only have you disgraced your brother Lou, but you stand there and make a monkey out of a great masterpiece. You ridicule Romeo and Juliet, the greatest love story of all time, and you deliberately insult the name of William Shakespeare. Why do you do these wicked things?
Oh, I'm a bad boy!
Yeah, I'll say you're a bad boy.
Oh, I'm the kind of kid my mother won't let me associate with.
You certainly are. Now, come here. Now, where is your brother Lou?
I think he might be in the fourth grade classroom, Uncle Bud.
What makes you think that?
Because I locked him in there before the show.
Sebastian, unlock that door and let your brother out. He's probably in there crying his eyes out because he missed the play. Go on, open that door.
Okay, Uncle Bud.
Go ahead.
I love you, Millicent, my darling.
And I love you too, Costello. Kiss me, my sweet.
Costello, what are you doing making love with a fourth grade teacher? You know she's the janitor's girl.
You're telling me, Abbott, and I'm the new janitor.
But you missed the whole play.
Oh, don't worry, Abbott. Millicent and I are going to put on another play tomorrow night.
Another play?
Yeah, and I'm calling it The Girl Who Eloped with the New Janitor or Gone with the Window Cleaner.
I love you, Costello, my sweet.
I love you too, Millicent, my sweet.
Oh, he's a bad boy!
Abbott and Costello will be back in a moment.
Thanks to the Yanks of the Week, tonight we salute Technical Sergeant George James H. Logan of Luling, Texas, who is one of only two men in this war to receive both the Congressional Medal of Honor and the Distinguished Service Cross. In your honor, Sergeant James M. Logan, the makers of Camels are sending to our fighters overseas 400,000 Camel cigarettes.
Each of the three Camel radio shows honors a Yank of the Week by sending free 400,000 Camel cigarettes overseas, a total of more than a million Camels sent free each week. In this country, the Camel caravans traveling from camp to camp have thanked audiences of more than 4 million Yanks with free shows and free Camels. Camel broadcasts go out to the United States three times a week, are rebroadcast to our men overseas and to South America. Listen tomorrow to Jimmy Durante and Gary Moore, Monday to Bob Hawke in Thanks to the Yanks, and next Thursday to Abbott and Costello. And before we hear from the boys, I'd like to say the Merchant Marine needs more men to man the supply lines to victory. And to eligible men, it offers not only a well-paid and worthy present, but a splendid future. In 6 months' time now, you can make the progress it would have taken you 3 years to make before Pearl Harbor. Get all the facts. Go to any United States Employment Service office or wire collect to the United States Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. And now, here are Bud and Lou Costello with a final word.
Thanks, Ken. But it's getting a little late, so all we'll have time to say is just good night, folks.
And good night to everybody.
Good night
to... buy bonds.
Buy bonds. Good night, folks.
Good night to everybody in Patterson, New Jersey.
Good night, neighbors. Good night, neighbors.
Be sure to tune in next week for another great Abbott and Costello show. And remember, try Camels on your throat and your taste. See for yourself how Camels' mildness, coolness, and flavor click with you. If you are a hermit living in some lonely cave, don't listen to this, because you're one of the few men in the world who can pack his pipe with any old tobacco he pleases and get away with it. But if you want your pipe to make a hit with people around you as well as yourself, then load up with Prince Albert. That wonderful fragrance, that aged-in-the-wood aroma, gives your pipe real pipe appeal to other folks as well as yourself. Besides that fragrance, Prince Albert has a rich, full-bodied yet mild flavor. It's no-bite treated for tongue gentleness. It's crimp-cut to pack, draw, and burn perfectly. And what a bargain. Just about 50 pipefuls in one regular 2-ounce package. More pipes smoke Prince Albert than any other tobacco in the world. The Abbott and Costello Show for Camel Cigarettes will be back at this very same time next week. Don't miss it. This is Ken Niles in Hollywood wishing you a pleasant good night.
I'm Jim Dolan. Thank you for listening to the RTC Weekly Download. We'll be back next time, and don't miss it.